Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. My guest is Dr. Susan Block, and Dr. Susie and I have gone back a while together, and we have some things in common. In fact, back in the early 90s, we were guests on CNBC's Real Personal with Dr. Bob Berkowitz. And you remember that, Susie Block?
Yes, indeed, Dr. Diana. I sure do. Bob Berkowitz on Real Personal.
On Real Personal. We weren't on the same show at the same time, but I think we were both repeat guests over the time that he was on the air with CNBC.
Those were the pre-internet days.
Exactly right.
We were where it was at in terms of sex education.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he and Dr. Bob Berkowitz was very good at asking the right questions and very comfortable about sexuality.
Bob. We love Bob. I had him on my show when he came out to L.A.,
to talk about
his book about sexual fantasies. But you and I didn't meet, actually, until Ava Cadell introduced us at some sort of think tank. Female pleasure.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And Dr. Ava Cadell, coincidentally, will be my guest next week.
Oh.
We're going to talk about sexual health. And then, soon after our introduction, and at the time I was living in Los Angeles, I came to one of your infamous speakeasies. I think it was about 2005.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, you did. You came and you were beautifully dressed in red and very little of that.
Well, you have such a good visual memory, don't you?
I do, and there were many, many other people that were very well and scantily clad at that event. I believe it was one of our Eros Day celebrations, something like that.
Something like that.
And
wasn't HBO
filming you? But you definitely made
you?
An impression on me. You really did.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't HBO there that night? Because I remember signing a release.
I only had eyes for you, Dr. Diana. I don't know if they were there. I did. You're so bonobo-esque.
The bonobo-esque. In fact, you signed my book, and I treasure it. To Diana, a beautiful bonobo-esque spirit.
Bonobo-esque. I actually mangled it to begin with, so I can't blame you. But it is bonobo-esque.
Peace through pleasure.
Bonobo, the bonobo way.
Yeah.
You practiced the bonobo way before you'd heard about bonobos.
This is true. But I also heard you speak about bonobos at one of our ASAC or Quad-S conferences.
Quad-S.
Quad-S. And I've mentioned Quad-S before on this program.
Invited by our friend Dr. Hernando Chavez to name drop a little more.
Sure. But let's tell, Quad-S is 4S, the Scientific Society for Study of Sexuality. Did I get that right in the
I'm
right
so
order?
I'm so glad you got that right. I would have.
So, the bottom line is that you and I really
yes,
like
you gave
sex.
Me a lovely introduction to my little talk on the bonobo way there at Quad S. That was before I wrote the book. This has been percolating in me for a while, since I first saw the bonobos. And I must say I was inspired to write the book in some ways, to put it into a book, by another one of our mutual friends and colleagues who I'm corresponding with right now, because he's going to be interviewing me this Saturday. Dr. Christopher Ryan, author of Sex at Dawn, who gives you a hug.
Yes, and he has been on this program, Love, Lust, and Laughter, a couple of times. And my fiancé and I have had dinner with he and his wife and have had several encounters. And isn't he a delight?
He's just so bright.
And he's... And let me read for the listening audience his testimonial, his blurb on your book.
All right.
The Bonobo Way. First things first, this book is really good. The Bonobo Way is a very unusual book. Whimsical, yet serious. Easy to read, yet thoroughly researched. Challenging, yet ultimately deeply comforting. That's a pretty good testimonial, I'd say, Susie.
Pretty good. And hopefully it'll go deeper and broader when we talk about the book, you know, this Saturday. Yeah.
Yes, it no doubt will. Mm-hmm. So, listening audience, Dr. Susan Block is, in fact, internationally acclaimed, and she can be controversial. She's done a number of HBO sexologists and therapists kinds of programs. And what's really unique about this book is that she offers an exciting alternative view of human sexuality, war, peace, and community. And all of this is inspired by a role model who isn't even human. It's our closest genetic cousin, the bonobo. And, of course, Christopher Ryan also writes about the bonobo in his book with his wife, Sex at Dawn. So, I love your book. It's provocative. It's humorous. You have a very engaging style. What a lot of people don't know about you is that you're very well educated and very bright. I mean, you're a Yale graduate. I know you spoke to...
Oh, that doesn't mean I'm bright, by the way.
Oh, I know, but...
George Bush is a Yale graduate? Come on. But...
Oh, okay. Well, let's not compare you to George Bush. That's no comparison at all, but...
But Yale did give me my first degree, so to speak, in theater, and, It definitely gave me a good start on studying, but not exactly the bonobos. You know, I wanted to major in anthropology, but, anthropology at Yale at that time emphasized the paradigm of the killer ape. And it said to me, all the teachers and the courses, that you know, humans were irrevocably, irredeemably violent and warlike, and that sex was always a question of males dominating females and females submitting, and often reluctantly, and it just was too depressing for a peace-loving, you know, quasi-hippie-esque, sophomore like me. So I preferred to major in something where you could actually get credits for kissing your classmates if you were cast in the right roles. And so I majored in theater. And I was always really tortured by this paradigm, of course, as many of us who believe in peace and female power, empowerment, have been, you know, kind of put off by this paradigm that is based on the common chimpanzee, who is a very close cousin of the human. The bonobo is equally close. And really, studies about bonobos are just emerging and showing that not only are they equally close to us genetically, but they seem to know something about sex, war, and the rest of life that we don't.
And you write about this in an eloquent and sometimes humorous way. It's a wonderful book, and I want to I'll write this up after our show, because the program, of course, while it's airing live now, it'll be archived, and so the website for Dr. Susan Block is bonoboville.com, bonoboville.com. And folks can purchase your book, which now you were very generous. You sent it to me as a book, but but it's also available. Tell the listeners how else they can read your work.
Well, first of all, I'm so glad you gave out the address to my new social media site, bonoboville.com.
Yes.
And that is a social media site. And if you know how to click here and there, you can eventually find how to get the book there. But the most direct way to get the book is at bonoboway.com.
All right.
Or to go on Amazon and just type in The Bonobo Way.
All right.
You can find the book, and yes, it's available in Kindle and in paperback.
It's such a good read. It's such an easy read. It's fun. It's and of course, the Bonobo Way boldly asks, "What do these great apes know about sex, war, and the rest of life that we don't?" And I'm hoping, Susie, that we can have a part two because there's way too much to discuss in just one show. But here are some of the things that we know about bonobos, and I want to go through this kind of step by step. But they have a lot of sex. They never kill each other. They empower the females. They stay younger longer. And they live in peace through pleasure. So let's get into the book. They have a lot of sex.
Yes.
And you start talking about that on your page 3.
Yes, bonobos are known for sex. Usually if you know anything about bonobos, you kind of get to know that they're very sexual, and they're into both quantity and quality, really. I mean, on a typical day, they'll have sex several times, and in a bonobo sutra of positions, many different positions, from doggy style to swinging upside down with different partners. But, you know, most often and most interestingly, they have sex face-to-face. And a lot of people think that humans are the only ones to have sex face-to-face. But no, bonobos maybe even have sex face-to-face more often than we do. And they certainly gaze intimately into each other's eyes. You know,
it's really
remarkable.
And that's so unusual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And tell our listeners about the anatomy of bonobos that enables them to do this.
Well, the females are built with their genitalia, which are quite large, big, big vulvas, it's kind of rotated forward as opposed to the common chimp where it's rotated more towards the back like a lot of other mammals. But bonobos are rotated forward pretty much close to the way humans are. And so that makes it much easier and even more comfortable to have sex face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both heterosexual sex and homosexual sex.
Yeah, the bonobos are quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. And, of course, your book is, especially the second part of the book, is about releasing your inner bonobo and how you can benefit. But we're going to kind of stay, at least for this show. You think there's a chance we can do a part two down the line here?
Well, okay, the book has two parts. Why can't our show?
Oh, right. That's what I like, Susie. That's great.
Yeah. And the first part, you know, you really need to get to know the bonobo, your kids and cousin. This is a member of your family tree. And, I mean, there have been books written about bonobos before, so mine isn't the only one where you can learn about bonobos and what they are and how they behave. Mine is probably the first book that that really talks about bonobos as a new grade 8 paradigm to inspire humans. I mean, Chris's book, Sex at Dawn, certainly has some sections that get into that in a way, but this book is really about using bonobos to inspire us, you know? I mean, to make us better animals, perhaps, to
yeah.
help us to practice peace through pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we certainly know how to do a lot of things better than they do, like build churches and and galleries and museums and pentagons, you know, and jailhouses too. But they seem to know something about sex, you know, how to have lots and lots of great sex. And they seem to know something about getting along. Making peace through pleasure. I call it anger management bonobo style. You know, I like that so much. Unlike common chimps who kill each other sometimes, not as often as humans, but they do.
Yeah.
And they do make war, common chimps. They have a little, you know, rudimentary form of tribal ganging up on other tribes. But bonobos don't. They don't. They just seem to use sex to diffuse violent tension. It's really quite remarkable. And yet, it's so, you know, resonant to me. It makes sense. I mean, you can't very well, you know, you can't kill somebody while you're having an orgasm. It's very difficult, anyway.
In your book, you have bonobo sex therapy, another vital purpose of sex in Bonoboville is to ease stress, you write. In this case, the invitation might go something like this. And I'm going to read this because this is such a good example of the humor and the ease in your book. Don't be so upset. Come here and sit on my face. Or, you're making me nervous, but if you would please just pet my penis, I'll calm right down. That's so good.
You read that so well. You should have been in my Yale theater program. Wow.
Well, my minor was theater arts.
I thought so. I could tell
and
there
I've
was
done,
a drama
I've done a
background.
Fair amount of theater.
And a playback. You know what? I think our mutual theater backgrounds are part of why we are bonobo-esque. There's a lot of play involved here.
Mm-hmm.
All
Lots
the world's
of play.
A play, or well, actually, it's a stage, but yeah, it's a play too. You know, and
you know,
bonobos are very playful, and sex is a big part of that.
You know, so often when I'm doing couples therapy, and I have a very busy practice, I'll say, let's remember here, sex is play. And a few of these couples look at me like, okay, I don't quite understand this. And some of these couples are from other countries. For instance, India, where there's no sex education. And so, you know, that is a problem. And because, you know, did you know about this,
Susie?
Tell
them to watch bonobos. I find that just looking at bonobos makes you more playful. I mean, I remember the first time I saw bonobos back in 1993 was on a PBS special. This is when we had to get our information, you know, on PBS. It was called The Nature of Sex, and it was just great. It was like 4 days of animal sex, and I just loved all the different animals, the zebras and the cheetahs and the fruit flies and everything. But when it came to the bonobos, which was their fitting climax of the show, maybe right before humans, and I mean, I was just amazed. It really felt like looking in a mirror and seeing a side of myself that I'd never seen before, but that I knew was there. With more hair, of course, hair and longer arms and all the other differences. There's quite a few differences, but so much that is deeply, kind of shockingly familiar. And, you know, it struck me. And then I went, wow, and what's with all the sex? I mean, the special showed them having sex in all the different positions and, you know, and then they went on to say that they do it not just for procreation, like, you know, we thought animals did sex only for procreation, that we humans were the only ones that were so perverted as to do it for other reasons. Mm-hmm. Now we've since found out that other animals do it for all kinds of reasons, but bonobos especially engage in sex for recreation and communication, very much like humans. You know, but without a lot of the pretense and the hypocrisy and the shame.
And
it got me very, very excited. And no, I didn't want to have sex with bonobos, but I did want to have sex like bonobos.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, I often prescribe, so to speak, to my clients, looking at bonobos if they really want to, you know, learn to be more playful.
I think it's very good advice, and you have lots of advice for humans throughout your book, and one of the things that you talk about is how turning on your partner requires tuning in to your partner. And bonobos do that very well. And we know as sex experts, as sex therapists, that to have really good sex with a partner requires a good amount of attunement.
Yes, absolutely. Empathy.
Empathy.
Empathy. And, you know, like we were saying before, bonobos look into each other's eyes quite like tantric sex practitioners or two people in love, and they really do tune into each other. That's very important. And, of course, you know, they do it with different partners. They don't just do it with one. They might be sort of in love with one partner for a while, but then they'll have other partners. Mm-hmm. They're into both intimacy and diversity. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And yeah, empathy extends, of course, beyond sex, although sex is certainly a critical way to feel empathy is through sex, which combines so many senses. And yet that empathy can extend and does extend into sharing all forms of pleasure and into sharing peace through pleasure. And I believe it can extend into making peace on Earth, even though that sounds very grandiose.
It's yes, but that's a key theme in your book.
Yes, it is.
Peace through pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And the bonobos
seem to have
achieved it.
Well, I certainly think it can make peace in individual relationships. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about, in Bonoboville, easing stress and making it part of conflict resolution, too.
Yes, well, stress is often a cause of violence. I mean, it's not always, you know, but one of the big causes is stress and just blowing your top, you know, and if part of day-to-day, moment-to-moment relationships is, you know, the use of physical erotic touch, not always sexual intercourse. I have to say in here, it's important to get across, bonobos don't spend a whole lot of time on sexual intercourse. They spend a whole lot of time on what we might call outer course or foreplay, oral sex, petting, massaging, and gazing into each other's eyes and, you know, these things that we think of as the lead up to the big thing, which is intercourse. And they, you know, they don't spend a lot of time on intercourse, more on that other stuff. But that other stuff is incredibly important to calming stress.
Absolutely.
And the bonobos show us that, as studies show how they use, you know, touch hugs and, you know, elaborate hugs that last long time or, you know, foot massages and ear licking and all kinds of things to calm down stress, jealousy, because it's not as though they don't have jealousy. Just because they mix and match with their partners, and by the way, they are quite polyamorous, and they swing not just from the trees, but with each other.
Yes. Now, I want to postpone that discussion just a little bit, because that would be especially appropriate for part two, the swinging, the 12
yeah.
steps to releasing your inner bonobo.
What about the bisexuality of bonobos?
Yeah, and then the bisexuality, too. But conflict resolution, I love this in your book. And I'm going to use my dramatic skills again, hopefully. One possible script might go something like this. Fight, kick, slap, bite. Ouch, ouch, time out. Let's turn around and rub butts. Quick, before someone really gets hurt.
Boy, and, you really... Go, you release your inner bonobo when
you do
readings,
yeah.
Dr. Diana. And by the way, that's a illustration of my own idea of a, you know, kind of what's going on between bonobo males.
Yes,
and even
males.
Though, yes, this is most specifically about conflict resolution, it's really
right.
also a lot about their bisexuality. In fact, their bisexuality is a critical aspect of their conflict resolution.
Yeah, say more about that, Susie.
Well, like those two bonobo boys you were just dramatically reading for, they resolved their conflict, whatever it was over, whether it was over a woman or over food or whatever, they resolved it through sex. They wind up doing penis fencing is one way, rubbing the penises together. No, it's not. When I first heard penis fencing, I thought of, you know, penises going on guard. But it's, just rubbing together, which, you know, quite a few gay and bi males enjoy among humans. I don't know if it has stopped any wars, but, maybe if we understood how it operated, it might. It certainly does seem to stop wars between bonobos. Sometimes it's the penis fencing, sometimes other kinds of sexual acts like oral sex, sometimes it's just a hug. Certainly, although sometimes females will enter in if they see two males fighting, they'll go, stop, you know, and let's have sex. Let me give you both blowjobs, relax. that could happen. I mean, there's lots of ways in which sex does help to calm things down. Sometimes it's heterosex, but very often it is what we might call gay sex or same-sex relations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, among the females, it's also very interesting.
Yes, and you write about this a lot. Do talk about that.
You know, bonobo females are the hot bi girls of the great ape world.
Mm-hmm.
They develop powerful alliances, real female solidarity, in which sexual activity is a very, very integral part. And, this is very, very passionate. These ladies aren't just gay for pay. They are into their girl-girl sex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process, you know, as soon as a young adolescent bonobo girl joins a new clan. And by the way, it's the girls that migrate among bonobos, whereas among common chimps, common chimps, the girls do migrate too. Among other species of ape, the males migrate. Vibrate, I almost said. But the bonobo babes, you know, they join a new clan, and then, you know, they're young girls, and they don't know anybody, and they literally suck up to one of the group's older females so that she will show her young friend the ropes, or the vines, you know, and groom her and have sex with her and eat with her, often at the same time, as we were discussing eating while eating, you know.
I love that, eating while eating.
Of Bonoboville. Mm-hmm. And this develops a relationship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the females will often have sex with all the females, but there's usually, like, best friends or kind of an older female taking a younger one under her wing. And It is worth noting, by the way, that bonobo female prestige tends to increase with age, and there are no old forgotten grandmas in Bonoboville. They're all having sex or at least getting lots of care because, you know, strong females
are important. I read that in your book,
important.
And it's refreshing.
And
because
and when
if,
a male,
if we could do that a little more in our human lives, and not just discard older women.
Hey, we
you know, and I see, you know, you and I are older women, but we will never be invisible because we're vibrant and we're sexy.
We work
and we're,
it, girl.
But there are lots of women that feel invisible.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, that doesn't happen in Bonoboville.
Yeah, I
just,
know that.
It's
and
her sisters, who aren't really sisters because they're not blood related, they've migrated mm-hmm. from other tribes, but these are strong gal-pal relationships. And if a male, and the males are, of course, stronger physically, they are mm-hmm. bigger, and they have fangs. So they could hurt, they could kill the females. They can certainly mm-hmm. rape the females. But rape is extremely rare in bonobo mm-hmm. tribes. Because if a male is so crazy as to get out of line and attack a female, her gal pals will defend her and jump on him and teach him a lesson and sometimes
and,
hurt
and
him.
And you write that that even happens if there's her little boy bonobo son.
Yes.
And in other... Yes.
Mm-hmm,
go ahead.
Infanticide. Because mm-hmm. infanticide is a very, very common tragedy among common chimps and all
mm-hmm.
the other apes, including humans.
Mm-hmm.
But bonobos don't have infanticide. These big, strong males do not kill the babies. They learn. The females prevent it. And
talk
and
about female empowerment, right?
This is female empowerment, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a bonobo female, your gal pals have your back. Whereas if you're a common chimp and you get attacked, they're constantly attacked and their fellow females just look the other way. They don't lift a hairy little finger while their girlfriend there screams in pain as she's being raped or attacked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, her baby killed. And anyway, these are two different types of apes, both on either side of human, you could say, in a way. And what are we going to be? Are we going to be angry, old, grumpy common chimps who kill each other, or bonobos who have a lot of sex? Don't kill each other. At
mm-hmm.
least we haven't seen them do it so far. I hope that somehow we don't teach them to do it. You know, in some primate centers, they teach them things, you know, human ways, like roasting marshmallows and hot dogs. I think
really?
We'd be better off if we learned a bonobo diet, you know, of fresh fruit and vegetables.
Right, right.
But, and a little bit of meat. But, you know, I mean, there's I, on the one hand, I respect the primate centers because they are studying bonobos, and we so need to learn about them. And they're communicating with them. Bonobos can communicate through computers. They can play video games with us. They can just astonish us with their what we call intelligence.
Yes, yes.
And they make tools, you know. One recent study, though, says that one tool was a weapon. I feel like it was because the researcher kind of made it into a weapon.
Mm,
bonobos
yeah.
don't do that. But they mm-hmm. can make tools if we teach them, you know. They
mm-hmm.
don't bother in the wild. And by the way, speaking of the wild, I just want to get in here that bonobos are highly endangered and that all this study, all this stuff that we're learning about them and about ourselves and about the universe, it will shut down if they go extinct. And so we really, I mean, a percentage
of
all proceeds
on your website,
for the book and for everything I do really goes to help save the bonobos. And even if you people out there who are listening don't like to read, I hope you you know, look up bonobos and donate to either Loleya Bonobo, which is a sanctuary for bonobo orphans, and Bonobo Conservation Initiative, which is helping to prevent bonobos from being hunted in the Congo.
Yes, you have a donate place on your website, and I hope people do click on that from time to time.
We need to save them. I mean, we've got a lot of other animals to save, I know. You know, the spotted owls and dolphins and, I don't know, there's a lot. Elephants. But I guess being human, I'm partial to bonobos, being a sex-positive human.
A sex-positive human, and you have told me that in 1993 you fell in love with bonobos.
I did. I've never had sex with a bonobo, though, contrary to some of the gossip. But
I'm
they do
surprised.
Inspire me. I think they're better than porn, and actually there have been studies done of other people who, I'm not the only one, I'm not the only perv, but especially women who are turned on, that's in the book too, who are turned on by watching bonobos have sex. They don't want to have sex with the bonobos, but it's something that releases our inner bonobo. It helps us to get in touch with our animal nature to see this. And also I think, I mean, this is a little more intellectual, but, you know, seeing how the women, the females, that is, I call them women sometimes because they're so close to us, how they are aggressive about sex and how they own it, you know, and that's inspiring to females and to women, you know. And I think it's inspiring to men, to human men, to see male bonobos be very chill and just get laid a lot.
Yes. So, in among humans, I often talk about, and I think you mentioned this in your book too, that somewhere after 50, human women become more assertive, and men become more romantic. And the bonobos sort of don't have to wait till they're older. Which is perhaps a good segue into the next thing I'd like to talk about, the fountain of youth for the bonobos. But isn't that right that the roles are kind of more fluid with bonobos?
Very fluid.
Yes.
And the bonobo males are in touch with their feminine side, and the bonobo females are in touch with what we might call their masculine side.
Yes.
They are assertive about sex. They get first dibs on food. It's kind of an egalitarian society. You know, the males are in charge of certain things like securing the perimeters of wherever the tribe is sleeping.
Right.
They are, you know, they are hunter-gatherers like humans used to be for so much of our existence. So they move along, and the males kind of protect and are in charge of that. But the females get to have first dibs on food, and food, of course, is an important part of their barter economy. And, you know, there's a lot of food for sex going on. Now, the whole barter of food for sex is extremely common throughout the animal world, probably even the plant world. It's everywhere. Everybody has food for sex. But usually it's the male giving the food for the female to have sex. In Bonoboville, it's very often the female who, you know, picks up the check, as we say. You know, says, here, I have a banana and, you know, eat my pie.
Right.
You know?
And then you write, eating while eating. Sometimes both occur at the same time.
Bonobos do love to combine food and sex. It's, you know, and these are their most fun things in life. If you're going to have some food, why not share it with someone you love? Or, you know what, they'll also be happy to share it with an attractive stranger. And, of course, if you're sharing the deliciousness of food, why not share the deliciousness of each other? Plus, it helps to calm down the arguments over the food, because very often, if common chimps find a big bunch of food, or baboons especially, they will fight over the food. And that it becomes, you know, somebody gets all of it, you know, or just a couple of the big strong ones get all the food. And everybody else is grumping around or getting hurt. But bonobos work it out through, you know, sexual favors in exchange for some of the food. You know, usually the most powerful females get most of the food, and then they kind of divide it up and get some sexual favors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's...
They're not ashamed to pay for sex.
It's
the kind of sex that they want.
You know, and of course, when we are back to humans, we know that so-called aphrodisiac foods can, and feeding each other and different textures and setting the scene, can slow people down so that they become more sensual.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
Yeah.
And that's important to remember that I should add, you know, I don't mean everybody should, like, imitate bonobos in every little way that they mm-hmm. do things. And one of the ways is, you know, you don't want to eat while, you know, having rigorous intercourse. You don't, like,
right.
want to be chowing down on a banana while you're
you might
having,
choke or something.
You know, penis-vagina intercourse or something, or anal sex. I mean, on the other hand, combining a little food, you know, some sort of whipped cream or something with oral sex is a good idea. I mean, the bonobos sometimes do things with food and sex that would give us major indigestion. But it's a feeling. We don't want to copy them exactly in terms of how they live, and I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying we want to be inspired by them.
And we can be inspired by them. So let's go to what is the secret to Bonobo Fountain of Youth?
Yeah.
That's another thing about bonobos.
Bonobos stay younger longer. Yes, they stay younger longer, certainly mm-hmm. than their common chimp counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
Common chimps and bonobos both start as babies in a similarly cute way. You know, they one's not really much cuter than the other, but as common chimps get older, they become grumpy old chimps, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And bonobos seem to retain what primatologists refer to as their juvenile characteristics and their perpetual youthful cuteness. And it's partly hormonal, and there have been some very recent studies about the hormones that get retained, especially in the bonobo males, so that they just look younger and they act younger. But I think that what I call the bonobo fountain of youth also springs from their lifestyle. And you know, we've of course been talking about the lifestyle. It's a low stress lifestyle compared to the life of a common chimp. So of course that is going to make you kind of be able to retain your playfulness and your youthfulness. One of the things that makes us get old and grumpy is stress.
It's stress with high levels of cortisol and adrenaline, and that wreaks havoc on every part of a human body, and I imagine a chimp body as well.
Yes, yes, and the bonobos are always subverting that. They're just always calming each other down. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not like they're naturally calm. I mean, you look at them, you know, and you can see them all over YouTube. Lola Ya Bonobo has quite a few wonderful videos that are out, made some of them done by Vanessa Woods, who wrote a wonderful book called Bonobo Handshake, which is about her experiences with bonobos, and also very inspiring to me. Came out the same time as Chris Ryan's Sex at Dawn. So there's wonderful videos out there that can show you just how they can get really kind of upset and emotional and bent out of shape about this or that, and then they kind of calm each other down and often have sex.
You write, it's not just nature. Nurture also keeps them young at heart. Baby mm-hmm. bonobo boys are pampered little princes.
They are.
Coddled by their doting mothers and looked after by mama's loyal gal pals.
Surrounded
by milk.
Yeah,
that's another piece of this, isn't it?
Yes. Interestingly, bonobo, mother, and son is the one combination that doesn't tend to have sex that is sexual intercourse.
I remember
they play
that.
And pet and kiss and touch. I mean, they do all those other things, but they don't really have sex. But the bonobo boy is certainly coddled and babysat by his mother's girlfriends, and then when he gets to be old enough, he will certainly have sex with all those hot MILFs.
Yeah, the MILFs.
You know, I mean, as a therapist, I mean, I know that it's so stressful for boys to go through being so attracted to all these hot MILFs that surround them and not able to, you know, connect in that way. And these bonobos, they just, that's how they are brought up. Plus, of course, they grew up without much fear, hardly any fear, of the males that surround them, the adult males who are so big and strong, because they have this system of keeping these males from attacking them. And the males, you know, kind of all act like their uncle. I mean, their father, you know, they don't know who the father is. That's another element of all of this. And that is a serious element, is bonobos make sperm wars, not real wars. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we fight over is property, and females in human society are considered property. The essential tale of war is Helen of Troy fighting over the woman, a huge war over a woman who also represented territory, property. And of course, bonobos bring us back to a time when humans were hunter-gatherers and we didn't have any more than we could carry on our backs. So there wasn't much to fight over, so there probably weren't much war. This is something, you know, that really gone into in Chris Ryan's Sex at Dawn.
Yes, that's right.
But yeah, bonobos, they also, you know, don't even fight jealously over the females. The males don't, because they kind of all have sex with all the females. And in a way that is described more fully in the book, their sperm duke it out in the vaginal tract of the female so that in the world outside, they can be peaceful and just bros, you know?
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, I think so.
So, and I really like what you wrote. I'm looking at page 39 here. This kind of deep, active, early mothering is critical to keeping the peace in the bonoboville.
And to that I hearken to one of my mentors, Dr. James Prescott, who, you know who he is. He's been writing about this stuff before any of us knew about bonobos, about peace through pleasure in human cultures and how that works. And and a lot of it is about an open-minded attitude towards sex. A lot of it is also about early, strong mothering and very physical mothering. And of
I would say mothering in terms of humans, and now I'm kind of veering into attachment theory, but it, with secure attachment, you have a mother who is absolutely there for you with eye contact and holding and kissing, but also a father, and then for a girl, for a daughter, the father's affirming her sexuality, at least enjoying that she's becoming a young woman as she begins to go to into puberty, that can make a huge difference in terms of her adult relationships with men. And for guys who have a mother who is there for them. Now, again, we're talking about humans, but it plays out, obviously, with bonobos, too. But with so a mother who is there and responsive, they're going to be better lovers and just being there as a human being in a relationship.
You know, human society is so much, so complicated.
Yes, it is.
And there are various reasons. Like I said, we can't totally imitate the bonobos, and we have to forgive ourselves for that. Understanding what the problems might be does help. I mean, just because bonobos are incredibly polyamorous doesn't mean we all have to be. And you and I talked earlier about, you know, incorporating some of the bonobo way into a monogamous relationship. Mm-hmm. And likewise, you know, I mean, yes, in Bonoboville, in the real bonobo society, a bonobo male's whole life is based on his mother.
Mm-hmm.
The alpha male of his clan will lose his status if and when his mother dies.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a little tough. I mean, not too mm-hmm. tough. Not as tough as certainly common chimp world, but he's still treated well, but he will not be the alpha male anymore. Mm-hmm. He has to, mother and son are just this incredible alliance that just is powerful in Bonoboville and the real among the real bonobos. So mm-hmm. I don't know if we can translate that to our world. Certainly we can see that sometimes does exist in human civilization. And certainly we can see how important mothering is. But sometimes a surrogate mother can do very well for humans. Sometimes, you know, you can be adopted and you can do okay. And I think that we have to be inspired by the bonobos, but not just limit ourselves to the bonobo vision. You know, just be inspired.
Be inspired. That's right. And mm-hmm. I'm looking at your book. I'm jumping ahead.
And if you have a lousy mother, that doesn't ruin you.
You know, no, it doesn't.
You can find mothering some other way, but it is a red flag. If you have a mother that abandoned you or neglected you or beat you or something,
mm-hmm.
then you know you need to maybe get some therapy, read some books, work on it, because it's a problem. It's a problem. But it's not an unsurmountable problem, and one of the great things about being human is surmounting problems.
Absolutely. You say it very well, and I work with lots of women and men who've had lousy mothers, and
there you go.
They've had anxious or avoidant attachment and worse. And, you can overcome it, but it does take some work, some awareness. And I read in your book that your mother was an art teacher. And you did some early drawings about King Kong and you when you were just a young girl.
Yes, I was always kind of, you know, eroticized by hairy apes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Big ones, especially.
You were destined to do this, Susan.
I guess.
To write about bonobos and to be researching the whole field.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because a fellow, Yaley, just wrote about how when he first met me, I was climbing around on a Yale building or something like a monkey. And, you know, I guess I have had an inner bonobo. I just haven't known what to call it until I met these guys and just connected. And I think we all have an inner bonobo. It's not always expressed by climbing around where you shouldn't be climbing. That's one of my, you know, hobbies. But it is a way, you know, one of the chapters is on swinging through life. You know, bonobos,
yes,
you know, have an ability to swing from one situation to another, a potentially bad situation that could, if it was among common chimps, result in death. And they have a way of diffusing that. And I think we can learn a lot from them about, you know, how to do that and about how to share pleasure. And, of course, as you were saying, the empathy that I think is required to make peace on this planet. And, you know, since I wrote this book, I've made a lot of great connections with different groups around the world, actually. And, you know, like the eco-sexuality group, for instance, Dr. Serena Gaia
mm-hmm.
and Lindsay Hageman and Annie Sprinkle and Beth Stevens and
yes.
We just put out a book. Actually, Serena, Gaia, and Lindsay edited Ecosexuality. I have an intro to the book, a foreword that gets my bonobos in there, because bonobos are in a way ambassadors from the human world to the rest of the world, because we can speak to them, like I said, through sign language and even just through looking in their eyes. And, you know, you can see through all the wonderful videos on the Internet, dogs doing amazing things, mm-hmm. cows doing amazing things, that animals are not so far from us as some of our elders have tried to make out. There's been this effort to say that humans are vastly superior, and we come to find out that animals have all these interesting talents, and bonobos are the closest. They're our closest. They're our ambassadors to the rest of nature, to the whole ecosexuality of nature. And they are key to helping us save our planet, I think. Not save the planet, because the planet will survive, but, you know, maybe...
Sure.
Maybe and save some humans and maybe save them.
And Dr. Susan Block, you know, you have tapped into something that is very important and crucial. And so we will do a part two.
All right.
Where we can talk about swinging.
Yes.
And bonobo BDSM, which you write about in your book.
50 Shades of Bonobo, baby.
Right.
Yes, there is such a thing as bonobo BDSM, but stay tuned to find out.
Stay tuned to find out. We have to stop in a couple of minutes, but mm-hmm. I just want to thank you so much for this nearly hour of such good information, such inspiring information, and it's really so enlightening for lots of people to hear about this, because I think a lot of our listeners didn't have a clue about bonobos.
Oh, and there's so much misinformation. We'll talk about that next time. Planet of the Apes and, you know, about bonobos.
Planet of the Apes. Those apes were really aggressive.
Yeah, and they even have a bonobo as being, like, the most aggressive, which is so wrong. There's a lot of misinformation out there, and also just general ignorance. So I'm so thrilled to be on your show. It's been such a pleasure. Definitely a shared, very bonobo-esque pleasure to talk to you about our kiss and cousin.
I'm glad to hear you say that. So I want to end this program with another couple of quotes, some blurbs. And Betty Dodson, who's also been on my program, has she been on yours? I would guess
so.
Oh,
yes, many times.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. And
she writes a delightful and insightful at how our closest genetic cousins embrace sexual pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
And they masturbate, by the way. She's the...
What?
Betty is the godmother of masturbations. I just wanted to get in there, but bonobos do quite a bit of masturbating.
Oh, yes.
Yes. We can talk about that next time.
Yeah. I'm sure. And, yes, Betty Dodson is she's the masturbation maven. She's
mm-hmm.
just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Annie Sprinkle, she says.
The ecosexuality maven.
Yeah. Eco-sex visionary, and isn't she something?
She certainly is, and I'm so pleased she endorsed the bonobo way.
Yeah. All right, there is the music, so that
there
means
it is.
We're going to stop, and thank you again, Susie, so much for this program.
My pleasure.
Well,